Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight!
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everybody, to the 212th episode of Dave's Gone By. On this radio station, AM 1240 WGBB Freeport, also live streaming on the web at am1240wgbb.com. I'm Dave. You've been hearing my voice since October of 2002, and you've been hearing my voice solo for the past couple of weeks, but I'm very happy to say that back in the co-host or the guest co-host chair, once again, fresh and clean as a daisy from his trip to Thailand and China, is my good friend, Jeff Goodman, who has just joined me on our Little Big Time pre-show here. Welcome back, Jeff.
Thank you, Dave, but I must tell you, I have to squeal a little bit.
Oh, squeal like a piggy. Come on, do a real squeal.
Suey? Suey? I don't know how to squeal.
Now, see, if I were Appalachian, I would have shot you by now.
Poor Ned Beatty.
Yeah, well.
How do you squeal like a pig?
No, suey is when you call the pig. What? I don't know, how does a pig squeal?
I can't do it. I'm not feeling all that well. I'm not feeling all that well today.
I thought you had gotten a bad cold, coming back from Thailand, but apparently you were fine, and then you got sick.
Yeah, well, you see what happened, Dave. I came back from Thailand on Thursday, and like a mad fool, they had another Price is Right thing. So I flew back. I was only on a plane for a day and a half on Thursday.
Yeah.
Because Thursday occurred twice because I crossed the date line. But to wrap your head around that is way too much.
Way too much.
Because we landed in San Francisco, I think it was 8 hours before we left Japan.
I love
really,
that.
Really weird. So, but anyway, I flew for a day and a half, got home Thursday night, and decided to leave for the West Coast on Sunday.
That's just retarded. I mean, you were still jet-lagged at that point.
My feet were still vibrating from the...
What is the rule of thumb on that? Like, for every hour over 3 hours into days something? What's the thing about getting over jet-lag?
Strangely enough, I want you to know that after my flight, when I got to L.A.,
yeah.
And I slept one night, my jet lag was totally gone.
Oh, that's cool.
It was great.
That's good.
Because I went the other way. It was kind of weird.
Yeah. All right. So, again, you went back very quickly.
I went back to do the Price is Right.
Thing.
Well, I seem to be doing a lot of these Price is Right test shows. They're still testing people to replace Bob Barker.
Right.
And I've been, I've done three test shows, and I've done one real show, and my TV got delivered.
Oh, that's right, because on the real Price is Right, the one with Bob Barker that you won at the end of January. You won a hammock, and you won a big, giant screen TV, Mazel Tov.
It's huge.
And do you like it? Have you plugged it in yet?
No.
Are you going to?
Yeah, eventually. Well, I have to remodel my living room to accommodate the TV.
Yeah, you have to, first of all, seal up the ceiling so that thieves can't just climb in and grab it.
It's the TV. You have to understand, the box is over 6 feet long. It's unbelievable. But it's actually not too, it's not bad. It's only like 150 pounds.
Oh, well, yeah. At least did they put it in when they delivered it? Is it in the spot in the room where you want it?
Well, no, I have to totally redo my living room. You have no idea how big this TV is. I mean, I still watch The Price is Right regularly, and they have never given away a TV this huge before.
Well, Mazel Tov, man. It's going to be a wall.
It's a 65-inch TV.
Oh, God.
It's like...
People are going to be life-size. They're going to be taller than you on your TV screen.
Well, no, because it has that panoramic screen.
Oh, okay, well, maybe not.
But if you, it's about the size of that window behind you.
Yeah, I'm sure that's very helpful to everyone listening at home.
Well, if next time you go into a radio station, look at the window.
Well, congratulations. So how did you do, first of all, who were the hosts of the guests
this last time they had Mario Lopez.
Uh-huh.
It was like Dancing with the Stars Day.
Is he a good-looking in person?
He's fabulous.
Ooga! Okay.
So it was Mario Lopez. It was the guy, the second time for the guy who does the Las Vegas Prices Right.
Okay.
But he was still pompous.
Oh. So, well, you liked him better than O'Hurley. You said O'Hurley was
terrible. O'Hurley was terrible.
Okay.
And then they the second show was George Hamilton, who was actually quite good.
Go
and very tan.
Very tan. He was very tan.
He was very tan.
Okay.
And then there was the guy from Beauty and the Geek, Mike Richards. Not Michael.
Not Michael Richards.
Like, but the host, and he was very, very good.
Okay.
So I think Mike Richards pretty much has the inside track right now.
Well, were you did you talk to all your audience mates, and they all felt that he?
We all felt that he was pretty good.
He was the shizzle. Yeah.
He was pretty good. I still personally like the guy from The Young and the Restless. I can't remember his name now.
Oh, you like him so much. Well, did you get to come on down?
Yes, I did.
Unbelievable. You came on down.
Yes.
And?
Well, this time they made it very difficult for me. I only got to bid on two items.
Uh-huh.
And the first item, I overbid by $5. I was the first one out. And they said everyone backstage was going, oh, Jeff only missed it by
$5. So in other words, if you overbid, you're out.
Had I said $11.95 instead of $1,200, which I really normally do, I don't know why I said $1,200. Mm. And then the second time, I was the second bidder, and that little, can I say the B word? Is it time that I can curse?
Oh, sure. Yeah, a B word is any time.
There was a little bitch in the second seat who was the fourth bidder, and I bid.
Sounds like you're the bigger one, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I was, because I could have played Plinko.
Oh, well.
I mean, and I really wanted to play Plinko.
Oh, well.
And so I bid, and she bid a dollar more than me and then won the thing.
Oh, so was she really a bitch, or she just beat you, and that's why she's a bitch?
She just beat me. So
oh, okay, well.
She, you know, because that's what you do, is if you really, I mean, I think you should give people, like, a couple dollars so they have a chance to win. But, you know, like.
Well, again, in the test ones, you're not even playing for
right.
prizes.
I know, it's kind of crazy. I'm just very competitive.
Yeah, but I'm glad you got called on down. You had the fun. You enjoyed it.
I'm telling you, the announcer now, he saw me and he kind of pointed to me in the audience when he was talking. He knows. He said, I've been called down more than any other person in the history of The Price is Right.
Every time, I guess, you go for a test show now, they know if you decide to, if they still have test shows once they pick somebody. Yeah, because, again, you can't go on the real show anymore.
It's
a lifetime. Why don't you try for Jeopardy or Wheel of Fortune? You'd be cool for Wheel of Fortune.
I think Deal or No Deal.
Deal or, oh, yeah, that one too.
And then will you come and tell me, go, try again. Lose some money.
Oh, I actually haven't seen the show. I flipped by it. I watched the girls for like 10 seconds, and then, you know, Howie Mandel comes on and click. Yeah,
I'm not crazy about Howie Mandel, but you can win lots and lots of money on that.
Okay, if you're lucky.
So, no.
You can also win lots and lots of money in the lottery, but.
No, Deal or No Deal. If you can't come away with over $50,000, you're not really
Ooh.
Doing it right.
Well, and then you got to be lucky enough to get picked for the show.
Yes.
And by the way, let me tell the folks who's lucky enough to be picked to be on this program, besides yourself and myself. Tonight's guest on Dave's Gone By is going to be the puzzle editor, the crossword puzzle editor for Newsday. And he's also the author of a new book called Cruciverbalism for people who love crosswords, tells how to do them better, how to do them quicker, tips, you know, to get around them, to do them faster. He had just a cameo in that documentary Wordplay.
I can tell you how to do them really fast.
How do you do them really fast? Skip
you
them?
Turn to the solutions page,
oh,
and
yeah.
You put that in the palm of your hand and just write them down.
Well, that always bothers me when they put, like, the solutions to Sudoku on the same page as the Sudoku, because it's just too tempting. Why am I bothering?
It's not Sudoku, it's Sudoku.
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 Oh, that's very Japanese, and I want you to know it's very big in Japan, too.
It's big in Japan. That's a Tom Waits reference you won't get.
Yes, that's right,
but,
because I don't even like Tom Waits. But, of course, I did have, I had a layover of about 5 hours in Japan,
mm-hmm.
and then my plane was 4 hours delayed. So I was like 9 hours in Japan.
Well, that could have been worse. Come on.
They gave us a meal. They gave us a meal allowance, which was pretty good. And I actually had sushi in Japan.
Ooh, plain sushi. Oh, no, you mean physically in Japan?
Yeah.
Ooh, no, was it different? Was it better? Fresher?
I guess.
Smaller?
Who knows?
Like, it was one row on two drops of rice for $50.
No, it was actually quite reasonable. It was like I had like more sushi, more than I could really eat. Plus, I had a little soup. Before,
oh, very
it was kind of cold, and I think the whole meal cost me like $7.
Nice.
And that was airport money. I mean, that's in
the airport. In an airport, which is going to be supposedly more than...
Supposedly. Of course it's more.
Well, maybe in other countries it isn't. I don't know.
Then we were laid over when we went to China, and they gave us the equivalent of like $1.50 a person. To which I gave mine to my friend Pop, who was thrilled and went over to the Burger King. Because you can only eat at like the Burger King, a Dairy Queen. How odd is that?
Oh, you mean with American money?
No, they gave you in Thai baht.
Yeah, because in $1.50, go, you know, can't you buy like a gourmet meal in Thailand for $1.50?
No, not really. But
and an apartment for free with
it. It went fairly far. But I gave him mine because I had bought my Dairy Queen stuff with cash, and I wasn't too hungry. And he was thrilled because he ordered a triple Whopper. He thought that was hilarious.
Okay.
He got and
$1.50 buys a triple Whopper, yeah.
No, $3.
Oh, well. $3 in Thailand?
Yeah.
That's more expensive than about what it is here. That's kind of sucky.
A triple Whopper, no.
I've never heard of a triple Whopper.
It's three beef patties and all the other crap.
Well, if you figure you can get a little hamburger for $1 and get three of them, that's $3.
No, it's a Whopper. It's like, it's about a $6 hamburger here.
Oh, in Burger King?
Yeah.
I didn't think Burger King had $6 hamburgers.
Yes.
That's why I only eat at Burger King. But anyway, I've got to get on with the show.
Okay, sorry.
First of all, I want
to... Well, we'll have to leave some time another week to talk about my trip to Thailand and China.
Yes, we will. But not this week. Because this week we have special guest Stanley Newman, the crossword puzzle guy.
So of course, my mic is off. Is that... Did you just turn
off? Yes, I turned your mic off because I've got to get rolling.
Okay, rolling.
I've got to get moving on this. And I've got to thank our sponsors. Why don't you do the sponsor thank yous?
Let's see. I've not been here for a while, but we have to thank MortgagesRack.com.
That's right.
And then Minuteman Press.
Hewlett Minuteman Press. Minuteman 1315 Press. Broadway and Hewlett. And
the Copy Kings of Broadway.
Right. And who else?
And the theater magazine.
Which is called?
Insider.
Performing Arts Insider. You subscribe to this magazine.
I love it. I just don't remember the name.
Performing Arts Insider
Theater
Magazine.
I call
it
David's Magazine, personally.
Well, yeah, because I
said, where's that David's Piece of Trash magazine? It's only stapled, not bound.
It was bound before, but now
I know. I'm protesting. I liked it when it was bound. I do not like the staple.
Well, I have to tell you that the folks in the bookshops where it's carried prefer it stapled because it lies flatter lays flatter on their display things.
But
go
it shouldn't it. Be on their display things. People should be buying it.
Thank you, Jeff. And what is the fourth sponsor that we have?
Well, I guess that would be me.
Right. And
Fancy Schmancy Balloons.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and you can come see us at the party showcase this Sunday. The Marriott, the Uniondale Marriott.
You mean this Sunday, meaning the 25th?
The 25th, from 11 a.m. till 5 o'clock p.m., there's a big party showcase. If you're thinking of having a party or having a party, you should really come by and see it. It's quite spectacular. Tons of DJs, a lot of invitation people, me, a lot of, well, I'm the good decorator. Everyone
so you'll be showing your wares, as it were,
yes.
At this Uniondale Marriott this coming what is it, Sunday?
Sunday.
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 Sunday. Sunday. Sunday. Sunday. Sunday. Well, it is Sunday night, March 18th, 2007, day after St. Patrick's Day.
I am begone.
3 days till spring. We've got fun chat coming up with Stanley Newman, crossword puzzle editor of Newsday, plus got Inside Broadway, where I'll be talking about a couple of shows I've seen, including Prelude to a Kiss, and what's the other one? Room Service. Downtown.
I saw Room Service.
Oh, good. We'll both talk about
before
it.
That.
So, got to get on with the show. It's talk radio. It's comedy. It's music. It's been here since October 2002. It's Dave's Gone By. Don't miss a minute. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and I'm going to be having some cross words with someone. So that's a little pun, a little play on words for you, ladies and gentlemen, because I'm going to be talking about crossword puzzles with someone who's intimately connected to them and connected not only with the solving of them, but the creation and the editing of them. So if you are a cruciverbalist, definitely keep it tuned right here because I have in the studio at WGBB Stanley Newman. Maybe not a household word, but he's probably in your household if you get Newsday. Why is that, Stanley?
Well, because since 1988, Dave, I've been Newsday's crossword editor.
Ooh. Journalist puzzles, yeah. So, and you've written a book about the process of, first of all, falling in love with crossword puzzles and your journey from being, doing something completely other to becoming an editor and maker of crosswords.
That's right, Dave. My new book, Cruciverbalism, A Crossword Fanatic's Guide to Life in the Grid, is half autobiography, and believe me, I never would have thought that someone in the puzzle business would get to write an autobiography, but it's half memoir, half how I got to be in the puzzle world, mm-hmm. and the other half instructional to take either a beginning puzzler by the hand or someone who thinks they know how,
right.
what crosswords were all about and pull back the curtain a little bit and show some real useful hints, tips, and secrets to solving crosswords better. And I am a mathematician and statistician by training. I've lived on Long Island since the early 80s. Took the Long Island Railroad to work on Wall Street job for like 5 days a week like everybody else. A recreational doer of crosswords like everyone else. The New York Times on the way to work just to get my brain started. My life took a change direction because of a little ad I saw in the New York Times puzzle page in 1981. That was, come to the Stamford Marriott Hotel and compete in the American Crossword Puzzle Tournament.
Uh-huh.
I didn't think a whole lot of it, but I thought, hey, I think I'm pretty good. Why don't I spend a weekend in Stamford, Connecticut, and see really how good I am? I went up there. It was like a revelation, an epiphany. While I did not win or anything like that, I finished in 13th place out of 125.
Well, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, well, it was, yeah, not bad, yeah.
What was the epiphany, though? It's a bunch of people solving puzzles.
It's like, let's say you like drinking wine with dinner every night, and you just buy, you know, you buy your jug of wine, you know, 5 liters for $9.99, and you drink it for the health reasons, and then you go to Napa Valley.
Yeah, everybody drinks it for the health reasons.
Well, I'm trying to put a good spin on it,
okay.
to understand. And let's say then you go to the North Fork, and you take a tour of one of the many vineyards there, and you have a really good tour guide who explains what wine is all about and how it's made and what makes good wines from bad wines and how to appreciate the various aspects of wine making. You could leave there with a whole new outlook on wine and begin to take wine that much more seriously.
Okay.
Something very similar happened to me as it related to crosswords. I finished in 13th place out of 125 or so. It was a very lucky 13.
Right.
I decided, based on my experience there, that I could improve my skills seeing how the whole tournament was set up. And for the next year, on my own,
right.
I did hundreds upon hundreds of crosswords.
So like 3 a day or something like
much
that.
Much more, yeah, more, probably well over 1,000 in the course of a year. Looking up every word I didn't know, creating little file cards with every new meaning of it. Yeah, I was a little obsessive about it.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool.
Being not really much of a physical athlete in school, I found my competitive itches were well scratched by this particular event, and I thought I could get better at it. Over the course of the next year, I did all these crosswords, learned all these words, tried to improve my speed, right? Fast enough, but not so fast, you're not watching what you're doing. I returned to that Stamford, Connecticut tournament in 1982.
Mm-hmm. 1 year later.
Yeah, only a year later, and discovered to my astonishment that my skills had improved by a quantum level compared to everyone else in the room. And, in fact, in 1982, not only did I win that Stamford, Connecticut tournament, by which I ended up with an article all about myself in People magazine, of all things. Talk about weird. This, by dumb luck, happened to be the first year that a true national championship was organized, sponsored by Games Magazine and Merriam-Webster Dictionaries. And guess what? In August of that year, just a few months later, I won that tournament, too. And that got...
What was the prize? Like $40?
Prize was $1,500 and a 6-foot pencil. The $1,500, I can't tell you where that is, but I've still got the 6-foot pencil in my basement.
Well,
and that
I hope
started
you're not doing bad things with it, but okay, yeah.
For display purposes only.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that got me off to the races in becoming involved in the business end of crosswords. And I began editing a newsletter that expressed my point of view. Here's what I think crosswords ought to be. They ought to be reflective of popular culture and really shouldn't depend so much on the crazy words that a lot of people think are in puzzles. And of all places, the New York Times, the gold standard of puzzledom, had become 17th century sopranos and rivers in Bulgaria and genus of fruit flies. I mean, in 2001 or 1985, for that matter, who cares and who cared? The answer was only that editor of New York Times Crossword, and I was the first puzzle professional to go on the record to take on the 800-pound gorilla of the puzzle business.
I mean, you did this when the guy who was editing them was still alive. So now we can make fun of the dead, a guy named Eugene T. Maleska. If you're an ordinary crossword puzzle person, you saw the name, it's like, oh, okay, it's his puzzles, and they were tough. But you looked at them as someone who got into puzzles very deeply and said, well, this guy, he's from the Stone Age, he's from the Dinosaur Age. And you literally named him, took him on in, what did you do, a newsletter?
Well, yes, to step back for just a few steps. The first step I took toward entering the puzzle world was learning how puzzles were made. And thanks to my now friend, Will Shortz, who is now puzzle editor of the New York Times,
right,
who back in the 80s was the organizer of the crossword tournaments that I won. He was the tournament director of the Stamford, Connecticut tournament and the U.S. Open. He was an editor at James Magazine. So with much assistance from him, I learned how crosswords were made and developed the skills that enabled me to create puzzles that I then began publishing,
right,
in places like James Magazine and various published books and so forth. And the more I learned the guts of really how puzzles were put together, the more that I began to see how it really wasn't necessary to include these crazy words. That with a little bit of time and effort, one could create crosswords where every single word was a word you've heard of. A straightforward word. Yeah, it could be more difficult. You could put interesting words. You know, maybe the people might find interesting the word, the fear of peanut butter sticking to the roof of your mouth. I mean, that's a fun word, but I think a 17th century Albanian soprano is probably a little less interesting.
Yeah. And what is the word for fear of peanut butter?
Oh, it's arachibutyrophobia, of course.
Of course.
A-R-A-C-H-I-B-U-T-Y-R-O-P-H-O-B-I-A. Ding. No,
yeah,
I know that
right. We should have a fear of Iraqis. That's what we should have been going after. But wait, you wouldn't put. Have you ever put that in a crossword?
Of course not.
Oh,
no,
okay.
No, I just use that as a silly example.
But that was a real word.
Yeah, that was a real word. Okay. It was coined. All words are invented, of course. But yeah. That word was coined as a funny take on phobias. But what I was trying to say is that there was no reason for words that you couldn't use in a conversation with someone who never would do crosswords. There was no reason for words like that to be in puzzles other than the laziness of people who create the puzzles and the laziness of editors who say, well, that's fine. I don't need to put in effort. I mean, I'm just going to publish that the way it is.
Well, playing straw man, though, wouldn't Maleska have said, everything's being dumbed down in America. Kids are getting stupid. Our TVs, attention spans are short. Why not force people to have, like, really weird, obscure puzzle answers?
He didn't take that tack at all. He was very much the defender of the old guard. And remember, he was the house. He was the editor of the best-known puzzle in America, and which had a certain reputation. And no matter what Dr. Maleska did, the puzzle would still have that reputation. But I began talking on the record in my newsletter. You see, after I began making crosswords, I thought that if I were going to be taken seriously ever someday in the puzzle business on the business end, I needed to become an editor of crosswords because that's where the action is and was, and it still is.
Okay, yeah.
The best-known people in the puzzle business are editors, in fact, not the creators or the publishers or anything like that. And so...
So when you see Will Shortz's name on a puzzle, he didn't write it, he just vetted it.
That's correct. He decides what the crossword editor, perhaps much more than the editor of a newspaper, I get asked all the time, what does a crossword editor do as opposed to the person who puts the puzzle together? The crossword editor really is the one who decides what the puzzle is going to be all about, what the level of difficulty is, what sorts of words are going to be allowed, the level of humor and off-the-wallness, like to call it, a crossword is going to have, and what mixture of dictionary words and popular culture a crossword is going to have. Is it going to be geared to any particular generation or age group? Crosswords can very much reflect any particular point of view, not political, I mean,
well, I guess
vocabulary, level of difficulty. Crosswords these days are much more carefully edited than they used to be. And going off the track and going backwards and forwards, I would like to think I had a little something to do with it because back in the early 80s, I published my own newsletter. I got into the puzzle world in earnest by beginning to publish my own crossword newsletter where I functioned as editor and publisher. I discovered upon, as anyone would after looking at the puzzle business for just a moment, that there are very few puzzle editor jobs available.
Well, yeah.
And because people hold on to those jobs for a long time. As long as one's mind is active, you don't have to get on a train. You don't have to exhibit any particular physical skills. You have to have brain sharp. You have to be able to open your mail. You have to be able to pick up a pencil.
Right.
And so people have that job when they have it for a very long time. In fact, virtually all the puzzle editorial job openings come about when someone dies. And
well,
I looked
Maleska
at it.
Died.
Well, I looked at it very logically at that time. I was unwilling to wait for someone to die,
yeah.
And I wanted to become a puzzle editor, so I took a very unconventional route, and I don't think it's been followed ever since. I started my own publication, the same way that Connie Mack set the major league record for managing the Philadelphia Athletics for 50 years. He could do that because he owned the team.
Well, yeah.
And so I wasn't going to fire the editor as publisher, and I, using my newsletter as a foundation, a way to get my skills honed.
And you put puzzles in the newsletter.
That's right. Okay. I would accept puzzles from contributors. I would vet them. I would tinker with them. I would mold the level of difficulty the way I wanted. And I used the prose part of my newsletter as a forum to discuss what I thought were important issues in the crossword world. There was no such publication at that time. And it was around that time that I began to take a really close look at the New York Times crossword and discovered what I thought were major deficiencies. The marquee crossword of the country, I felt, could have been doing a much better job. The reason why I think no one else had taken Maleska on at that point was that almost everyone else of any note in the business depended on Maleska, at least partially, for their livelihood. Maleska was publishing books, series with a major publisher, publishing a brand new New York Times crossword every day. And so if you were a big name in the puzzle world and wanted to get your name out there and make a few bucks publishing your own crosswords, you had to cross paths with Maleska.
Right.
I had no such relationship with Maleska. I was not looking to inherit his job someday. I had no bridges to burn with him. Mm. And in fact, I really had this missionary-like zeal to try to make the puzzle solving world aware that I thought the New York Times puzzle editor could be doing a better job, and here's how. And of course, Dr. Maleska really didn't take too kindly to it, and for several years he basically swatted me away. The big turning point in that was the 75th anniversary year of crosswords in 1988, where many, many newspapers across the country made some headlines about that. And because I had gotten my name in a couple of papers because of what I was saying in my newsletter, I was appearing together with Maleska in many of those articles. And in fact, now reporters were asking him to justify some of the things that he was doing. And that was a major leap forward in the movement.
And he tried to swat you away a little bit.
Yes, and of course, it didn't work. I'm still here, God bless.
Well,
God bless the puzzlers who thought what I was doing was worth doing. And of course, I didn't originate the whole idea of solver-friendly, what I call New Wave crosswords. I was really very much a disciple of Will Shortz, who, as editor of Games Magazine, had been publishing for quite a few years these sorts of lively, interesting, in some cases very difficult crosswords, but crosswords made difficult by cleverness and deliberate obfuscation, as opposed to digging your nose deep in the depths of the dictionary and using words that no one, not so much even ever heard of, but wouldn't even care about. Hi, Dave. Great to be here talking about cruciverbalism.
Let's get into the digging of a solving of a crossword puzzle, because people who feel like they'll pick up the puzzle on a Tuesday and then they'll wonder, well, why a couple of days later they're having so much trouble on the puzzle. That is intentional. It's not just the fact that you're more alert earlier in the week or anything like that.
You are exactly right. I hope many of your visitors have got access to the Internet, because on my website, www.stanxwords.com, I go into great detail about what the Newsday Crossword is all about, solving tips for during the weekend, as well as the, for many, dreaded Saturday Sumper, the toughest puzzle in Newsday by far. Deliberately, the Monday and Tuesday crosswords are designed to be as absolutely simple as possible, far easier than New York Times, probably far easier than any other newspaper crossword anywhere in the country. It's very important to me to have a place where beginners can go and get started, where you've got a puzzle where absolutely every single answer word is a word that everyone knows. Every single clue is pointing directly at the answer without any ambiguity, without any deviance of any kind. I mean, five-letter word, kind of apple given to teachers. up.
Shiny.
All right, we've got to waste that type of fruit given to teachers. Five letters is of course apple, or if it was a four-letter fruit, Bartlett or Bosque. Answer pear.
Yeah.
If you just had even type of fruit, five letters. That doesn't sound like a hard clue, but in fact, there are many possible answers, and so no one is going to be able to fill that in right away.
That's more like a Wednesday clue, or?
Yeah. Remember, in a crossword, every single word interlocks with other words.
Sure.
And you've got, on a daily crossword, about 80 answers. On a Monday or Tuesday puzzle, there are going to be a couple of dozen, probably, that anyone with a high school vocabulary and who reads the newspaper every day, there's going to be at least a couple of dozen clues that you're going to know the answer to without even looking at how many letters there are.
Right.
And what that takes is a very carefully edited crossword where anything that might be a difficult answer, any clue that might not be direct, is altered to point you like a laser toward the answer. I've talked with many, many thousands of puzzlers one-to-one over the past 20 years or so, and it's amazed me how many literate people who are English majors, people who are newspaper reporters, come up to me and say, you know, I've never gotten the knack. I've never figured out how. And I always tell them, you're doing the wrong crosswords. Crosswords, unlike Scrabble or Monopoly or Chinese checkers, don't come with a set of instructions. You're just sort of expected to know what it is you're supposed to do. And in fact, people know what they're supposed to do, read the clues and put the answers in. But there's a lot more to it than that.
So what are some other things that people ought to know if they're tackling, let's say, a Wednesday puzzle, where it starts to get a little more difficult?
Yes. Now, what makes the crossword a little more difficult as you move toward Friday, starting from Monday? There are going to be fewer and fewer of the clues that are going to be immediately obvious, so you're going to have fewer places to start. There will be a little bit more vagueness, like on a Monday, if the answer is pear. Yeah, Bartlett or Bosque. You give two examples of something, and the answer can't possibly be anything else. On a Wednesday, type of fruit, four letters, so you don't know if it's a date or a lime or a pear or a plum or any one of the other four-letter fruits. That's going to slow you down. Where I might deal in a fact that would be obvious to people. The capital of Massachusetts, six letters. I mean, that's not going to be too difficult, I hope. Again, if you read the newspaper every day, you're going to know what the capital of Massachusetts is. There are many more difficult... There are many more difficult ways to clue the answer Boston, for example. I mean, Franklin's birthplace. I mean, maybe that's easy, but you're going to have to... Not everyone's going to know that, and I could get even more difficult than that, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I'm talking to you also. There's things like misdirection and weird kind of puns.
I love misdirection and puns. Puns show up most often on Mondays and Tuesdays in my titles. For example, I love thinking up titles, and titles are perhaps the most important thing for a crossword solver to look at before they begin. A title on every Newsday crossword is meant to give you a little hint as to what the main idea of the crossword is without telling you too much. I'll give you one of my favorite examples. I had a crossword a few months ago where the answers were all related to articles of clothing. Like could have been things like toothpaste cap and the cat in the hat and brake shoes, if you see what I mean. Each of the phrases has a keyword that, when taken out of context, is something to wear. It's a part of brakes, B-R-A-K-E, auto part.
Oh, I didn't know. Okay, yeah.
So what kind of title could I give? Well, I could have said things to wear, but that's too obvious. And I thought, let my mind wander, as I love it to do, and I came up with the title, What's On Today?, which almost sounds like it's about TV listings, and you've got to go get through the puzzle a little bit to see that What's On Today has nothing to do with television. It has to do with what you're putting on. And there is an innocent way for me to get my devious wordplay into the Newsday puzzle on Monday and Tuesday, but it's that kind of deviousness that now gets put into the clues as you approach Friday and Saturday, where some of my favorite tricky clues I'd love to share with you. Take the very innocent phrase, leaves home, which sounds like you're going out to dinner or to work or whatever.
Right.
And leaves home, four letters on a Monday would probably be goes or something like that. Right. However, on a Saturday, the deliberate misdirection, which makes it sound like you're just leaving your residence, where leaves is a verb. Just think about it. Leaves can also be a noun.
Right.
And in fact, if I wanted a real tough clue for the answer, tree.
Right, it's the home of
leaves. Right. Home would be a really mean clue for that.
Oh, man.
And I love tinkering with what I call the natural ambiguities of the English language and telling you on Saturday, it's not called the Stumper for no reason. Right. You have to suspect everything. And it's not, yes, it's more difficult, but it's, I always want people to solve it. And it can be solved if you know, as you should know, on Saturday, you can't take anything at face value. You've got to pull those words apart. Think about the other meanings words can have, and don't assume just because it sounds like an everyday colloquial English phrase that has a meaning you recognize, that doesn't mean you can't pull the words apart and make it mean something entirely different.
Like, what's another example of a weird?
Oh, here's
misdirecting.
Here's another one of the great ones. I had one across in one of my Saturday Stumpers a few years ago. The answer, scofflaw. Now, we all know what a scofflaw is, someone who doesn't pay his traffic fines or who I have to come after or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to think of a real mean, devious clue for scofflaw. Well, I let my mind wander, and how do I come up with devious clues? I try to think of words that have multiple meanings that are associated with those answers. And so the word fine is associated with scofflaw, of course.
Yeah.
A fine is what the scofflaw is attempting to avoid. Fine can be a noun, but of course fine can also be an adjective, can't
right.
it? And so, with a little bit of devious thinking,
yeah.
I came up with the very devious clue, fine skipper, which sounded like a nautical clue,
yeah.
but in fact, the literal meaning, you got to pull the words apart, and it's not a very good captain of a ship. It is a person who skips
on a
fine. If every clue in a puzzle were like that, no one could solve it.
Yeah.
And in fact, putting a mean clue like that is like telling somebody a joke. Once a clue like that shows up in my Newsday Crossroads, I can't repeat it. I have to continue not so much topping myself, but coming up with a completely different answer. And so it's really hard to come up with clues like that, as you might imagine. You've got to sit and you've got to let your mind wander. You open up a dictionary if you want to see what words are associated with it. But even if three or four new clues in a puzzle on a Saturday Stumper are like that, that's good.
Right.
There is vagueness, like I explained before, about the fruits. When you have a fact about Boston, I mean, I would come up on a Saturday puzzle with something I hope would be really interesting about Boston that you'd like to know, but you probably don't know about Boston. I'd probably open up a tour book about Boston, we'll see some of the attractions are, and just something interesting that probably isn't top of mind, but you enjoy knowing it. And that's the sort of thing I put in for with the answers were facts as opposed to words.
Well, you keep talking about, again, putting in stuff and making these clues and these titles. How much of a puzzle that's in the Newsday is you after someone else has submitted it?
Well, that's a very good question. In the case of my friend Will Shorts, he has said on the record that as much as half or more of a puzzle that appears in print, he is responsible for the clues of. Fortunately for me, I work with a much smaller group of regular puzzle makers than Will does.
Yeah.
Will gets 75 submissions a week, and he can only fill seven spots a week, remember. I get about 10 submissions a week. Many of them, most of them, are from regulars who know very well what it is I'm looking for in terms of level of difficulty, what easy clues are, the sorts of words that absolutely have no place on a Monday, words that, as I've already said, words on Monday have to be words that everyone knows without any doubt. So because my regular contributors, and they range from Randy Ross, who is the principal of Great Neck South High School,
yeah.
to an insurance guy in Pasadena, to a young guy in Calgary, Alberta. They geographically dispersed, a real estate agent in a tiny town in Illinois. But these are all people that have come to me through reputation or through my website, one thing or another, learned about me, and I have sort of train them into what it is I'm looking for. I would say less that has to be changed in the puzzle that I receive because my contributors know very well what it is I'm looking for. But I don't want to repeat clues from Monday to Tuesday or Wednesday, for example, and maybe they don't have a difficulty level quite right, and so I want to keep as much of the puzzle as I can. I don't want it to be my puzzle every day. I mean, it's there, it's the contributor's name on the Newsday page as well as mine every day. I will change answers to make them harder or easier to prevent repeats, that sort of thing. But perhaps as much as a third or more could be changed, but I certainly want to change as little as possible.
Now, in the old days before computers, when you were doing these things, you just took a blank piece of paper with a ruler and made lines and things?
I learned how to do crosswords the old-fashioned way with a piece of graph paper, a pencil, and a very large eraser.
Well, yeah.
You think you need to make mistakes when you solve crosswords. When you make them, you need to get those words thinking up. It's impossible to do it without an eraser.
I can imagine.
I started using a computer about 7 or 8 years ago. And just to be clear, I use my computer the same way a carpenter uses a screwdriver. The computer is a tool by which I use a database of words that I have put together to tell me what words fit best in certain places as they go in one at a time. After all, you can't very well have a five-letter word that starts D, Q, J,
right?
Yeah. And the computer is smart enough to know that, smart enough to take all the words and phrases that I know, either from dictionary or reading the newspaper or TV shows, and you know, all combinations of things, and based on a single word I might put in, say, star floors, one across. So I'm going to put that word in. I'm going to figure out where black squares need to go so I can actually fill in everything. The computer will then tell me the word underneath, based on just the letters, just the letter arrangements of scalpel going in the other way, what are the words that are going to fit best. And I take a look at that list, and I pick the one that I like, that fits well, that's as friendly and interesting a word as I can. And I create that puzzle one word at a time. It's actually just as hard, or perhaps harder, to create an easy puzzle, which I do, by the way, under pseudonyms. Can I reveal a secret to your listeners now that they maybe didn't know? Those Newsday regulars, people that do my puzzle regularly in Newsday, know that I do a Saturday Stumper under my own name, the initials SN, average once a month, once every other month. But what they probably don't know is that I have on average one Newsday crossword that I create in the paper a week, about one a week, under a pseudonym. Not only do I create the toughest crosswords that appear in Newsday under my own name on Saturday, perhaps the easiest crosswords that appear on Newsday on Monday or Tuesday under the pseudonym Sally R. Stein, which will be a recognizable name to anyone who does the Newsday crossword, but that's in fact me. Sally R. Stein, the letters in that name can be rearranged to spell it's really S-N. And it's not, and this is one time where this pseudonym is not meant to confuse anybody. I felt that because my name was associated with really difficult puzzles when it was my byline, I thought people might get the wrong impression that any puzzle with my name might be really hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so to prevent any possible confusion, I created this other pseudonym for myself for Monday. And so it's my puzzle on Monday or Tuesday almost every week under Sally R. Stein. And if you take a good look at it, you probably might not think it could be the same person. It's sort of making a split personality, schizophrenic. This I don't know. But it's simply different skills, right? You have serious actors who can do comedy and vice versa. Maybe not everyone can. But I take just as great pains to make the puzzle as straightforward and easy as I've already mentioned in the ways that I've mentioned on a Monday as I do to make them tough and scratch your head devious as I can on Saturday. It's simply different talents, different skills. And on a Monday, I'm working with a much smaller database of words, many words that would be perfectly fine on Saturday, would be too hard to use on a Monday, and I hope my Newsday audience appreciates it. From the letters I get and from the people I meet in the various places I talk, I'm pretty sure they do.
How long does it take you to put together a puzzle of relatively normal difficulty you're doing one yourself?
Well, fortunately, thanks to the computer, it takes much less time. Computer never forgets a word, of course, once I put it in. Mm-hmm. Just think about the process. I need a six-letter word. The third letter is an E, and the sixth letter is a D. Gee, maybe I could think of them all, or maybe I couldn't, but the computer never forgets any. And so pressing a button with my professional software, it'll give me a list of everything that fits, as well as how well they fit. And so because the computer never forgets a word, the linkage, the mix of words that show up in my crosswords turn out much better than a crossword I would make just from the words I happen to remember in my own mind. And like everybody else, my memory isn't perfect.
Right. So, but length of time, is it 2, 3, 4?
No, nothing like that. Fortunately, a typical diagram that I make for an easy crossword might take about a half an hour.
You're kidding me.
Well, I'm a professional, and I've been doing it for a while, so I'm pretty good at it. And it might take another half an hour or so to write clues. Although, for a Saturday Stumper, it takes far longer.
Well, okay, well, I believe you.
It's a puzzlement.
Hi, Dave. Great to be with you talking about cruciverbalism.
And you've also done some sort of specialty puzzles, like for major organizations. There's a story in there, like probably the most you've ever been paid for a crossword for anything. involved a rather famous organization that makes
It's very hard to believe that some lowly puzzle guy like me actually has had contact with about four people out of the Forbes 400. Can you believe it? It crosses all income levels, demographic levels, and I have to share this with you.
Yeah.
My crosswords have been done regularly by Roy Disney, nephew of Uncle Walt, who is in the on the Forbes 400. My crosswords have been done by Gordon Getty, son of J. Paul.
Nice. They don't have anything else to do with their time.
Well, you can be sure people at that particular level are occupying their days very different pursuits from you and I, probably. But I know for a fact one other fellow, his name is Edgar Bronfman Sr., yeah, former chairman of Seagram's before he sold it to a Dutch French conglomerate a few years ago. He and I met as a result of me doing a birthday crossword for his 60th birthday a little more than 10 years ago, commissioned by his brother Charles, former owner of the Montreal Expos.
Good heavens.
With cooperation of the New York Times, I created a crossword that was to go on a fake New York Times magazine section, where in place of the New York Times crossword was a crossword that I made all about his life, his helicopter and his elementary school teachers and his favorite wines and everything else that his brother could think of. It took 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And I was asked what I was going to charge, and it was the most difficult question I ever had to answer. I tried to liken it to a work of art. If Leroy Neiman was going to be commissioned to do a portrait of Edgar Bronfman using his outstanding, unique talents, and it took him 3 weeks to produce a work, he'd probably charge a lot more than I was going to charge. But because of the amount of time and all of that, I decided to ask for $7,500 because it sounded like $10,000 was too much. Although they instantly agreed, I just as instantly regretted asking for only $7,500. Anyway,
this is a man who's worth billions.
Several billions, according to the Forbes folks who should know.
Yeah, well, my goodness. Yeah, the one thing, though, that I was a little disappointed in is the puzzle that I like the best, and it is in Newsday on Sundays, is the cross sticks. Is that the word for it?
Yeah, cross sticks.
I love that because even more so than a crossword, you've got the phrase running across, so you can tell what the word might be that way. And then the first letters going down of all the clues add up to that.
Yes.
I love the whole...
Acrostic is a very different kind of puzzle, but you've hit on a very strong similarity between that and a crossword. You're going to have a whole list of clues. You have to fill into a diagram. It'll spell out a quotation when you're finished. Chances are no one who does that puzzle is going to know all the answers right off the bat.
Right.
Because of the way all the clues and the answers interact and the first letters of all the answers spelling out where the quote is coming from, you really only need to get two or three or four of the answers before things begin to interact and you get a couple of words here to put you back to the clues and back to the answers. And it's amazing how that process works. I'm not involved in cross-stick puzzles. I know how to make them. The cross-stick on the Newsday page isn't mine.
Right.
But no, it has quite a following, but I don't think it's nearly as strong as the crossword.
Interesting. Because my only problem with crosswords is that you really, most of the time, don't know if you got it right until you see the answer page.
And even that isn't true anymore online. My Newsday crossword is available every day on Newsday.com, as well as my website, stanxwords.com. And with the software that comes with the crossword, not only do you know right away when you get it finished, because when you put in the last correct answer, a little message will come up on the screen, congratulations, you finished it. You can also get hints, which you can't really get you can't ask a question of a newspaper, of course, but you can press a button and say, okay, I don't know what this letter is, tell me please, or I don't know what this word is, tell me please. And it's not cheating, and by the way, those of you out there who might never look up an answer and insist on getting it all right, well, I would not try to change your mind, but I think you're missing out on an important dimension in crossword solving, and that is learning things you don't know, learning interesting meanings of words you might not be familiar with, learning interesting facts about everyday people, places, and things that you might not otherwise know. And so if you don't fill it in, that's something you're never going to know, and I strongly recommend that maybe only as a last resort, at whatever point you think appropriate, that you do look up a meaning or a fact about puzzle clue and answer if you happen not to know it.
Discover the joys of ESNE.
Well, ESNE, ESNE, has gotten a really bad rap because ESNE is one of those very crosswordese words that used to appear in crosswords all the time. And I venture to say, in my 18 years of Newsday, well over 5,000 crosswords, that word hasn't appeared even once.
Whoa. So it's a defunct kind of word. You should put it in like one time.
And why should I do that exactly?
Just say defunct Maleska word.
No, well, I tell you what, I would not mention the good doctor's name in a Newsday crossword, and I would not attempt to perpetuate any of the things that I beat on him so mercilessly about.
But you are very much happier with the times now, and the Will Shorts is...
Will Shorts is, not only was he the perfect choice to inherit Molesta's job, his skills, his resume, but his desire, and his diplomacy, by the way, he is a great ambassador for Crossroads. He has his weekly show on NPR, which is very, very well listened to nationwide. He is...
Oh, well, listen, before I forget, mm-hmm. you, speaking of media, I mean, you've done more than this program. You mentioned you were on TV. In fact, payday for something.
Yeah, I'm a trivia bug going way back. I have a syndicated trivia column called Stan's Trivia Bits. Oh. It's Newsday doesn't run it, due mostly, almost entirely, I think, to the Newsday's current financial circumstances, such as they are. But anyone who would like to see some of the trivia things that I disseminate nationwide can go to www.creators.com, which is the newspaper syndicate that distributes my crosswords. I'm also the editor of a trivia encyclopedia called 10,000 Answers, the ultimate trivia encyclopedia.
Inside Broadway, brought to you by Total Theater's Performing Arts Insider, your everything theater guide. Yes, Inside Broadway. So much starting to happen now on and off Broadway. The season is beginning. Now it's March. We're after that big snowstorm, the weather's finally warming up, and all the Broadway shows are going to start to happen from now until late April, early May, to get in there before the Tony Awards. So I wanted to talk about one Broadway show that I saw last week, as well as an off-Broadway show that has one more week to go that I think you should catch before it scooters away. And that's not even a word, but it's late, and I can say what I want. So, first of all, in this Inside Broadway, I saw Prelude to a Kiss, which has been revived. Oh, that's Jeff doing the kiss sound effect for me. Do that again. And I do want to kiss this version of it. I had seen the play back in its original form, not off-Broadway, but when they brought it to Broadway. Alec Baldwin was in it off-Broadway, then Timothy Hutton and Mary Louise Parker were in it, and then later on I even saw it with Steve Guttenberg, of all people. And it's a nice little
Our
play.
Our favorite Master Pequot resident.
Is he really? Yeah. He lives on the island. So back then, I thought, oh, it's an amusing, sweet play with a very interesting premise and a nice resolution.
And Barnard Hughes.
And Barnard Hughes back then.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the current version has Alan Tudyk, Annie Parise, whom people will know from Law & Order. She's one of those beautiful DA people, but from about 2 years ago. And then John Mahoney from Frasier. Of course, he plays the dad, and he plays in Prelude to a Kiss, the old man who exchanges a kiss with a beautiful bride on her wedding day. And something more gets exchanged than just lips and body fluid. And it ends up making all people consider just what goes into a personality and what do we really see in the person that we love and have our life relationship with.
It's really a brilliant play.
So, love, you know, I think more of it now, having seen it in later years. But I also bring that because of what critics said about the original that I never saw in it. They grafted an AIDS metaphor onto it that I don't know whether author Craig Lucas put there. But for people who were watching the play back in the mid-80s when it first premiered, they were saying, oh, it isn't just about, well, you marry someone, but you really know them. This is a play about two young, beautiful people, and overnight, one of them becomes old and is about to die.
Mm-hmm.
And that's and when you start having that in your mind while you're watching it, it becomes a much more profound and sad play than just, oh, you know, what do we really know about the person that we love? So, with that in mind, it's a very nice production that's staged by Daniel Sullivan. I liked...
it's a roundabout production, too, isn't it?
Yes, roundabout at the American Airlines Theater. They've got some wonderful secondary parts played by James Rebhorn. He's a veteran, and he's terrific in almost everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he's delightful here as her father. Go see it. Prelude to a Kiss at the American Airlines Theater. Nice production.
Right on 42nd Street.
Very good play. Broadway, the best way, Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. Do go to performingartsinsider.com for more information on this really wonderful and incredibly useful publication, if I do say so myself.
It really is. I get a copy of it, and it really helps to see what's coming up, who's handling stuff. It's a really good piece of informative journalism.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jeff. Talk up our sponsors. I like that. Sponsors like that, especially. But let's also talk about a play that we have both seen. And I'm kind of happy to hear this. The only bad part of it is it's closing next weekend.
So you have to run.
You have to run downtown.
Is there any chance of an extension?
It's been extended and extended again. It was a little thing. They moved it theaters months ago because it was popular and it got great reviews.
Mm-hmm.
It's a revival of an old play by John Murray and Alan Boritz, a farce called Room Service. That's basically, if people know it now, it's because the Marx Brothers did a version of it on film that was sort of tailored to them but didn't really work, and it's not one of their better films. But let me tell you something. You get the right theater company in the right mood doing the right farce, it goes.
This works very, very well. And they have some wonderful actors in it. I was, like, really surprised.
The Peccadillo Theater Company. And, I mean, the lead guy is very good. It's not a Groucho Marxy kind of role. It's almost more of a Max Bialystock kind of role.
Uh-huh.
Although he is more reserved, in a sense, than some of the other people running around on stage. It is literally a door-slamming farce.
Oh, yeah.
And they slam loud in this very small theater. But you don't mind, because it's
what theater is
happening. It's at the Soho Playhouse on Van Damme Street. So definitely recommend it. You have one more week to see it. My favorite actors in it, Scott Evans plays the playwright who's this rube. He's not a rube, but he's right off the bus from Iowa, and he doesn't know the whirlwind that's about to hit him. And the guy's very, very good.
I love the guy who plays the manager of the hotel.
The big angry
guy?
No,
the small guy.
Yeah, John Simon liked him, too. I thought he was trying too hard in the beginning, and then he got very funny. He's like this little gribble.
He's
like running around so nervous that he's going to risk his job. But I loved the hotel supervisor, Wagner. Like, there's a character that appears often on this program called, Rabbi Saul Solomon.
Mm-hmm.
And one of his things is he says, damn it, a lot. Damn it, damn it, god damn it. That's just one of his things.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that came 50, 70 years ago in Room Service.
That's
from
probably where the rabbi got it.
And he does it so well, and it's so funny. Every time he gets more and more worked up, he turns beet red, and he's just cavorting around the stage in a rage. And it's funnier every single time he walks onto the stage, which is what farce is all about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So please, please, please don't go by the Marx Brothers movie. The play is fast and funny, and it's closing next weekend. Go see Room Service.
So you have to be fast.
Right, and do something funny at the box office. Or, I don't know what that means. And there are tickets available, because unfortunately...
Pay more than the box office price.
Let me tell you that when I saw it, it was a very small audience, like maybe 30 people in a house.
And I think you could probably...
And we laughed. And that's tough in a small house, when there's not that many people.
It's a very small house. So it also means there are no bad seats in the theater.
No bad seats. Well, it goes back. It's not. It's one of those theaters where you...
It's about 8 seats wide and about
25 seats. So you don't want to be all the way in the back.
But even in the back, when I saw it, I was about at least halfway back.
Yeah.
And I thought it was absolutely phenomenal.
It's a good production.
I enjoyed it a lot.
So two.
And it's also something you can bring the family to.
Well,
it's not like... It's,
yes.
There's nothing bad about it.
Well, except the GD word that we just mentioned a couple of times, but there's no...
Oh, because...
And they do one sight gag with a chicken that's kind of, shall we say, risque, if you get the joke of it. But... or the choke of it. But we won't go there. We can't go there. We don't have time. Got to finish up the show and get out of this little segment of Inside Broadway. We've just been Inside Broadway, thanks to TobalTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, the dwindling final minutes of this episode, so just have to do some thank yous.
I am begotten, it's almost over.
St. Patrick's Day is now over by 2 days. I don't know why you're still going back to that. The next big thing is that we're just a couple of days away from spring. Yay!
And next is our Christmas in March show.
That's right. December 25th. I don't know what that remotely means.
It means it's the 25th of March.
There's nothing to do with Christmas. Nothing at all.
Well, it's just on the 25th.
And yeah, it's like saying that June 1st is June New Year. It makes no sense.
Or it'd be June Fool's Day.
Yeah, exactly. We will be here, by the way, on April Fool's Day, April 1st, with our special guest, Joe Franklin. I'm so excited about it. I cannot tell you. And I'm going to try and give away his trivia book. So I'm trying to think of a good good contest for that.
I think it's a person who calls in and can fool us with the most the original news or something.
Okay. Or anybody who basically calls us, since we're so desperate for phone calls. Sometimes.
We are not that desperate.
But anyway, actually, we're not. We're not. We've got more than enough to fill up an hour, and we've overfilled this hour, so we've got to be quick about
we're
getting out of
here. Time.
Right. So just to take a couple of minutes more to thank our sponsors, MortgagesRock.com, and I want to thank especially Andy Leibowitz, who's the guy who founded that whole thing. And he had this business gathering this week of all local people on the south shore of the island. And we all got together and talked and drank and traded business cards. Very neat thing. So big thank you to Andy for doing that. And everybody go to MortgagesRock.com to find out more about
MortgagesRock.com. Money.
Performing Arts Insider. We did. Hewlett Minuteman Press, the Copy Kings of Broadway. 10% off, by the way. For Dave's Gone By listeners.
And they've just now gotten the smoke smell out of the place.
Because they were near that fire. They haven't fixed that machine that does the fold-over booklets, unfortunately. But everything else that you need at Hewlett Minuteman Press, you can get, and you get 10%
and
off.
And I'll bet you they'll fold them by hand if you really need them.
They do do that. They do fold them by hand if you want them to. And then, once more, Fancy
Balloons. Don't forget to come down to the party showcase. Next Sunday, the 25th, before you listen to Dave's
Gone By. Dave's Gone By later in the evening, that's right.
So from 11 till about 4 or 5 o'clock, we'll be there. I'll be there. Dave will be there.
Right, Uniondale, Long Island.
Yes, the Uniondale Marriott,
mm-hmm.
Right next to the Coliseum.
Great.
And you should see a lot of fun stuff.
Okay, so that's for Fancy Schmancy Balloons, Jeff's business. And people want also more information about Fancy Schmancy. Fancy Schmancy, call 516-797-3229. 797-3229. Got to do a couple of shout-outs. Shout-out to Nihal and G. Just want to say sorry about the snow and which screwed up some plans we had yesterday, but I hoped they enjoyed the bubble show, the gazillion bubble show. We were all going to go and see that, and I ended up having a freak out because of the weather.
Well, who wouldn't enjoy the gazillion
bubble show? I know. Also, I want to wish my mother and father happy anniversary.
Oh, my goodness.
Mom and Dad, I love you. I wanted to do that earlier.
When is their anniversary? Today?
Yeah, the 18th.
Of March?
Yeah.
On High of March?
High of March. So it's either 44 or 45. I think it's
45. Well, how old are you now?
I'm 43. And it was 43 in January. So my... Ooh, shame on me. I think it's a big one. I think it's 45. So whichever one it is, happy anniversary to you both. Love you guys. Mwah. 45 more.
You don't know what year they were married?
I don't remember. Like a year and a half or something before I was born. At least not after.
So it should be 45 now.
45. Mazel tov.
Yes, it's the lock.
I have the card for it.
It's
Mom
the
and
lock's anniversary,
the
by the way.
So anyway, also happy 5th birthday to our dog, Oofty Goof. Oofty turns 5 in the middle of this week, so
woof
to you. That's exactly it. Thank you also to Stanley Newman. You can catch his crosswords every day in Newsday. Either he writes them himself or he edits other people's. And get his book, Cruciverbalism, from Collins Books, an imprint of HarperCollins. I want to give a shout-out to my wife, Joyce, my beloved wife, who's been ill since her little trip to Philadelphia.
Joyce.
I want to give a shout-out to you. Well, I don't have to shout. You're right across the room.
Ow.
To my good friend, Jeff Goodman.
I hate when you shout.
Quick reminders. Listen to a vintage episode of Dave's Gone By every Thursday and Saturday night on live365.com. Just go to davesgoneby.org for all the links and all the information. You can also listen at any time, 24/7, for free to 25 different older episodes of Dave's Gone By at theaterpod.com.
Hey.
Well, you don't have to listen to them all on the same day. You know, you can listen to one a day and kind of get a whole sense of what the show is.
Kind of like a vitamin.
It's a one a day Dave's. It's a one a Dave.
One a Dave's Gone By.
I like that. And also, Jeff and I will be back at Stony Brook, WUSB, for the big time.
God willing.
God willing, assuming Jeff's healthy and I'm healthy and there's no, like,
ice
locusts.
Storm.
Yeah. Friday, March 30th is our next big time out in Stony Brook.
At 3 a.m.
Again, find out more information at davesgoneby.org. Okay. Coming up next week, Maud Maggart, lovely, lovely singer. Joe Franklin on April 1st, and then some other stuff coming in April.
I love
every
Joe
week
Franklin.
Is fun. So, we will be back next Sunday, March 25th, 2007, for the 213
The episode. Los Angeles episode.
The 213, the area code 213 episode.
Because you've been listening to the New York.
And it actually works because Maud is bicoastal. That's bicoastal, folks, not the other one. She lives on California, but also does a lot of stuff at the Algonquin here. It's the 213th episode of Dave's Gone By, so until then...
And then there's Maud.
Don't... That's actually what the name of the episode is going to be, and then there's Maud. Don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz wishing you good night, a most happy and frolicsome springtime, and one across, two words, six letters, meaning I've left the building. Come on, you know this one. That's
right. How many letters? It's gone by.
When the deep purple falls over sleepy gardens.